You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In 2008, Auckland University's Department of Computer Science initiated an annual series of lectures intended to describe ongoing research in computer science to a wider public, called the Gibbon Series. This year, the lectures took look to a step towards the singularity, artificial intelligence, and its impact. The third lecture in the series takes place tonight at the University of Auckland ONG Glen Building at 6 p.m. with guest lecturer Marcus Freen from the University of Victoria. I spoke with Freen about what he will be talking about this evening, the wonders of deep learning algorithms and possible implications for the science.
Machine learning is about taking big amounts of data and attempting to model that data and understand it. The simplest example is where you have a large amount of inputs and some, maybe they're images, and you have some category which is the output of the system. And we would like, humans know what the category is, they'd say there's a cat in this picture, but for a machine to be able to do that, it needs to learn, and machine learning is the way to do that. So deep learning in particular is a subfield within machine learning which is concerned with deep neural net as the engine for that learning. Deep neural net is, well, people always say loosely modeled on the brain, and it's very loose. It's really just an architecture of simple operations that are happening. Input patterns, those are vectors, processing them in order to produce desired outputs. And where desired means outputs that are reflecting what is present in some large body of data, what we call the training set. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Is it quite a changing industry? Do things change quite quickly? Is there a lot of development currently happening?
It's funny. Is it changing? Yes, it is changing really rapidly, but it's kind of ironic because the basic ideas have been around a really long time. They have quite a history, as in a really long time, as in the 60s, there was some activity, and then there was a lot of activity in the 1980s when people thought, you know, they could train these deep networks. It turned out they could only train shallow ones. That means a neural network with just a few layers, meaning just three or four or something like this. They couldn't really go beyond that. And if you can't go beyond that, it's rather limited the kind of tasks that you can do, the kind of things you can be helpful with. So they kind of stalled roughly and were overtaken by other ideas in machine learning for, you know, 10, 15 years. And then recently what's happened is these people have figured out how to train these deep nets after all. So they got them out of the waste paper basket, figured out how to train them. And now you can go out to hundreds of layers and millions of free parameters, things that weren't heard of before. And so that just opens up a whole spectrum of new things that are possible. And, you know, the science has moved on. Well, it's come up by a step change. There has been things have got a lot better. But really the applications have gone crazy, you know. Suddenly this new stuff you can do that you couldn't have done before.
Yeah, like what are some of the possible exciting applications that can be made?
It's a huge amount of hype in the press, so I'm sort of nervous about saying one could do all things. The headlines often read, you know, the machines are coming, they're going to sort of turf you out of your job and do everything you can do. And I don't really subscribe to that. But, okay, so, for example, the headline sort of results that really make people sit up and take notice are machines, learning machines that can match human performance on a bunch of tasks, such as recognizing what is being said in speech. So state-of-the-art speech recognition is now done by these deep learning techniques. The world's champion Go player is now a machine. It's a deep learner, taking images and describing what's in those images, automatically just saying what is in an image and outputting the answer as text that reads like a human wrote it. These kind of things, so that they start to blur the line between, at least in terms of pictures and text, the sorts of things that you would think, oh, a human did this. Now it's really blurred the line.
Yeah, it sounds like there's definitely a lot of potential there for some good.
Yeah, it is exciting times. I mean, one thing that's happening is everyone is jumping into this space looking for applications. It's like anything, a new technology comes along that breaches some threshold, in this case the threshold of doing as well as humans, and suddenly there's this huge possibilities for good, and also some frightening things, of course. These things always go together.
I suppose you do experience, is there, obviously people have fears and jump to conclusions thinking about, you know, Terminator and artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
is this something justifiable, these fears, or not? No.
I don't know. I mean, I wish I knew, right? I read these things and they see the headlines seem over the top to me. But then, you know, maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy and I don't see it coming. From my perspective, yes, you can. These things can do things that seem remarkably human. They're achieving it by essentially copying very, very well what humans are doing. They're not making it up themselves yet. They don't have any will. They're just machines. So I'm not sure quite how worried one should be about agency, these things being like Terminators. And other people, very sensible people, are quite worried about it. You know, the European Parliament is just about to vote. I think they have voted on a, you know, kind of ethical style controls on robots and speculating about whether they should be given legal status, much to protect other people, as you see. So, yeah, maybe I'm a little bit blasé. I guess I'm too close to the chalk face. I'm really interested in the algorithms and how it all works, and I've kind of got my head in that space, and the consequences are sort of not too sure.
Are there any sort of overwhelming boundaries that need to be overcome at the moment with the research?
Well, I realised I sort of dropped myself in it by calling my talk What's Missing, because it's very hard to talk about what's actually missing. If I knew what it was, I'd be doing it. But boundaries, I don't know. So one thing that hasn't really been done yet, symbolic style processing of the kind that people used to think of as AI. So, you know, what we call good old-fashioned AI was all about symbolic processing. What I mean is things like, you know, Johnny's a dog, dogs have four legs, therefore Johnny has four legs. These sorts of logical processes, stringing together complex symbolic plans. The way to get from A to B is to go first from A to Z and then come back to Y and then take a detour through W. This sort of thinking, constructing procedural answers to problems, this hasn't really been part of what deep learning's done before. But I think that's going to change. So I think one thing that might come, we'll have to see, it's just a guess, is that people are starting to think more and more about how to get these neural networks to carry out tasks that are more like that standard model of computation. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there much sign of interest in New Zealand versus, you know, internationally? Like, is there quite a foundation for New Zealanders who want to get involved in this?
Oh, New Zealanders are really keen to, you know, as always, we're keen to get involved and grab stuff and use it. So I think there's a really great and vibrant population of people who are just grabbing this tech and going places with it, using it to do stuff. I think it's a bit more difficult question what New Zealand does about the primary research, the fundamentals, you know, the ideas that generate the next new thing. That's less so. It's less obvious because in New Zealand, you know, that kind of blue sky research is funded through the Marsden Fund. It's always been very difficult to get Marsden funding for this kind of work. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it's the facts speak for themselves. So it's, I think in New Zealand, we could certainly use more rational, you know, scientific inquiry into the fundamentals. That's what I'd like to see more. I don't think we're lagging in terms of grabbing this stuff and going and running with it and making new stuff and practical problem solving. Yeah.
So you've got a talk tomorrow night at the University of Auckland, hosting a lecture.
Yeah.
In the Gibbons series, what can people know about this? How can they get involved and get along?
Yeah, okay. So it's called What's Missing. I'm going to pick up particularly a little bit nerdy about What's Missing. I'm going to talk about two specific aspects of the state of the art in deep learning, where there's a sort of scientific question, there's an explanation as what's missing. And I'm going to talk about that in some detail. It won't be a heavy maths talk, but it's going to be, you know, technical stuff. I think one could also give the same lecture with the same title and just talk about ethics, you know, what's missing ethically in the framework or in the practical landscape of what people are actually doing, the GWAS applications. I'm going to take the third road, which is to look at the scientific fundamentals of the technique.
So around, you know, up to 8,000 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.